Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. As a party cast, kind of. We got half a party cast here. We got Chris and Purnell, and then Aki's here, too. Aki, how are you doing? Chris, how are you doing? Purnell, how are you doing?
Give us time to answer.
No. Everyone answer together. Go.
We got to save time.
Yeah.
All the oxygen free.
Too lazy to go all at once. Sorry.
We just did.
I didn't.
You just said you're too lazy to do it. That's how you're feeling. You're feeling too lazy to do it.
But that was after you guys.
Yeah.
No, we're talking together.
That'll teach
right now. Woogity 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 woogity.
Nope.
Everybody's... See, we just said it again. Look, you said nope. I said woogity woogity.
So how is everybody's weekend?
Man.
Let's try and recall that.
I don't remember what the fuck I did. I'm old, remember? We just had this conversation. I did things, I spent money, I went into debt, you know, the shit.
What'd you spend money on? What'd you do?
Groceries. Everything costs money. We're old! We spend money on things that are mundane.
I thought
not
there was
fun.
A frivolous purchase that you made.
I bought gas and food. Debt.
Food's frivolous.
I just thought about it because I'm like, surely I did spend some money because I'm broke. And I was like, oh yeah, I spent $50 on a power cable for my bass amp.
Nice. We just spent $50 on a headlight this morning, so that was fun.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh,
there we go.
I did order a RGB modded Genesis, Sega Genesis Model 2.
So that'll be coming in tomorrow. Genesis does even more.
Yeah, which Nintendo also does, because my Nintendo systems are all RGB modded.
Nice.
Except the GameCube, because it doesn't need it, because I actually own the component cables for it.
They can do that on
Nintendo. Like, not many people own those things.
Yeah, those cables are like worth as much as the RGB modded systems all like combined.
I think more people own authentic Da Vinci paintings than own those component cables.
And you know, have I ever told that story on this podcast of how I acquired them?
Maybe, but we've got time, so let's hear it again.
All right, let's hear a story that sounds like it's going to be real exciting, but probably
isn't. It really doesn't.
No.
Someone gave them to me.
No. It was just like, okay, so like back when I first moved to Austin, we used to have like this yearly gaming party get together, and like part of it was everybody was kind of encouraged to bring like unusual stuff that they want to like play with other people. And so one year, one of the goals was that we wanted to play Legend of Zelda Four Swords Adventure on the GameCube with four separate GameCubes linked together as if they were like the Game Boy Advance like controllers. Because you need three players with Game Boy Advance controllers, but you can rig it to where you can actually land together GameCubes and have four separate TVs and four separate GameCubes playing.
Is this through manipulating the settings, or are they actually the settings actually in the game for it?
I think you just use the Game Boy player, don't you, on the...
Yeah, use the Game Boy player and just, you know, use the links that, you know, go from that to, like, basically you're turning your GameCube into a Game Boy for the purposes of...
Four Swords. My brain originally just made myself think Four Swords Adventures because GameCube, so sorry about that.
Oh, well, it is GameCube, but you're using Game Boy Advance controllers, so you're turning your Game Boy into Game Boy Advance controllers. You're turning your GameCube into Game Boy Advance controllers. I've lost the plot so bad. Anyway,
<Courts.
laughs> we did it. We actually managed to do it. We played like a couple, maybe 3 hours, and then everybody moved on to something else. So, which is kind of how Four Swords goes. But we did it at least for the sake of a story. And anyway, one of my friends that had brought over his GameCube, after leaving, left the GameCube component cables that he had, because he was one of those very few people who actually just ordered a set from Nintendo, because they were offering that at one point. Because, you know, there was a stink about, oh, GameCube's composite, but, you know, these TVs are high definition, so Nintendo was like, oh, here, have these component cables. We're going to make, like, 50 of them and send them out to only people who reach out to us directly, fill in a, like, card and, like, mail it in and stuff. And, you know, it was, that's why they're so rare. Because they only, you know, Nintendo's are the only ones that, at least for until, like, maybe, like, this last year, are the only ones that actually work. Anyway, so he left them at the apartment, and, like, I noticed, and about a year later when I was just, like, packing up stuff, and I messaged him on AOL or something, because this is long ago, and I was like, hey, dude, you left your component cables over here. He's like, oh, yeah, just keep them. I already moved on to, like, a Wii, so I just kind of, like, got rid of my GameCube anyway. So I was like, all right, but, you know, these things are kind of rare, and he was like, yeah, I'm not worried about it. And that's how I got a set of those cables for free.
And instead of paying right now, they're going for about $300
a set of
cables.
There's the local retro place around here is wanting about $350 for them. And yeah, that's about average right now.
That is.
And it's funny because there are, like, solutions. Like, now people are starting to, like, actually build, like, HD compatible, like, component and HDMI cables for GameCube that are actually pretty good. Plus, again, you can mod them. So, you know, it's not like this is the only way. It's just that's the only way Nintendo ever provided. No. So, yeah.
Man, anyway. That makes me miss playing Crystal Chronicles with, like, two other people.
I still have yet to get that together. I have a friend who does want to play it, and could probably wrangle one other person into it, but we just haven't done it yet. We live in long distances away from each other, but still in Texas. Because Texas is too big.
Good stuff. Anyway. So, Aki, what did you do this weekend?
Well, I got AT&T and then quit AT&T.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, I got it because it was going to end up being cheaper and a significantly higher speed. They put it in. It was one third of that speed on a speed test on my computer. And then every time I tried to use it, it was slower than the one fifth speed that my other internet was to load anything. So I called them and three different times within a 24 hour period to try and get a tech out here to do something to look at it, and they always did their, you know, oh, let us look at the thing, do you give us permission to interact with your router and shit, and I'm like, sure, send someone out here though, because I've done this song of dance with you fuckers a couple times now. They're like, well, it all looks good. I'm like, you can say it looks good, but it's fucked, so send someone. They wouldn't send anyone, so I decided to cancel them, like, 22 hours after I got it installed or something. I'm like, fuck this. I can go to my 20 MB down and be faster than the 100 that I'm currently supposedly getting out of the 300 I'm supposed to get. Jeez. Fuck you, people. Yeah. And then, other than that, I was just playing more of my review game that I just will never get to not play ever. And then today I found out that the place that has my home insurance is canceling my home insurance. Yay!
Why?
Because they have decided, in their infinite wisdom, that they are not going to have any more monoline insurance packages, which basically means if you just have car insurance from them, fuck you. If you just have house insurance from them, fuck you.
Oh, you need to bundle it.
They'll only do bundles from this point forward. So I have about a month and a half, not even, to find a brand new home insurance place, because that's when mine gets canceled completely. So
got a friend out there with a Carter saying, man, if only I could have insurance for a home. But rather, man, I wish I could get a bundle discount somehow by bundling it with a homeowner's insurance. And they're like, if only I had a car to bundle this with my homeowner's insurance.
God, because I just know that someone would default on me and I'd be in the shit. Yeah. So no chance in hell of that happening.
And
that's a fair point. I've been there with my brother. Fucking useless dick.
I would do this with either my mom or my stepfather's car, but my mom's been in credit card debt all but like 5 years of my entire fucking life. And I don't mean a little bit of credit card debt like everyone has for the most part. I mean like $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in fucking credit card debt. No.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Mom's paid that off a couple times and then just right back into it. So, yeah, no, I don't trust people when it can affect my finances negatively, because I know my family, and they're the most trustworthy fuckers I know. So it's like, nah, I'm good, fam. I'll just find a new fucking insurance. Fuck this.
Oh, God.
And, I'm good, fam. After I finally stopped feeling like shit from having, you know, not eating for a couple days because of that fucking... getting my fillings replaced, I now also have another appointment to get other fillings replaced. So, fuck my life.
I'm not in the SML chat.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate everything right now. It's all fucking miserable.
I'll tell you, I'll toast to that. Mm-hmm. Hey, here's the life being bullshit right now for reasons out of our control.
Oh, and a game I was trying to finish broke on me, and now I have to replay the entire game all over again from scratch.
Well, that could be fun.
It's not, because it's not that, it would be an okay game the first time through. It ain't gonna be fun the second time.
What's the game?
We'll be talking about it later.
Oh.
It wasn't for review, officially.
Sounds like a deny to me.
Yeah, it's not an official review, she just wants to bitch about a game, and I was like, well, we got time tonight.
And, yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, like, that whole, rant was like, That makes this party cast feel more like being at a real party than most other times.
What, me bitching?
No, just somebody. Just somebody complaining about, you know, some grievance in their life. That's typically what happens. At least the parties I go to.
How many parties do you go to?
More than I want to.
That doesn't sound like that's supposed to be something you're supposed to do at a party.
Always happens, though. I get cornered by somebody who's like... By the way, here's mundane homeowner stuff.
Oh, you want to hear my mundane homeowner shit?
Sure.
Yeah.
Fuck it, why not?
Cat peed on more 360 games.
No.
And yet you still keep them. No, it's so much easier to get rid of that cat.
The best part is, like, I have cardboard up.
To prevent that from happening.
But
you can't, because the cat wants to pee on your stuff. That's the goal.
They moved the cardboard... And it ended up hitting like 5 games.
Yeah. Wow. Because cats are.
They want to ruin your shit.
Yeah. So,
cats are evil.
So I want to take a moment here. We could have a moment of silence for 5 games lost.
Deserve them. You're keeping the cats. You don't deserve those seconds, dude.
There's a reason why I don't have cats. And dude, that is one of them.
Can we hear the titles?
Yeah. South Park, The Stick of Truth. You Will Be Missed.
Ooh, that's
Sneak King. You Will Be Replaced. You Will Be Back. Sleeping Dogs. You Had a Good Run.
Ooh, no.
Yeah.
That's a good damn game, too.
I have it digital, so I'm okay.
Cat saw the dogs, and that triggered him.
Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection. That one will be replaced, because that's a really good collection. And then, this one hurts the most. The Collector's Edition version of Skyrim.
Aww.
So with like the special one of the 90
other versions of it, you'll be fine.
With the special like cardboard packaging and all that.
And I mean,
stuff.
Again, and that one's an exclusive, right?
You already have
exclusive to what?
Just saying in general.
No.
How many versions of it do you already have aside from the one that got pissed on?
Oh, 8? I don't know. Probably.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad about that one. Now it probably smells like what it is. So it's fine.
What a good game. Skyrim's great. Shut up.
No.
How do you hate Skyrim? It's a
She hates joy and happiness.
That too, yes. I also hate how it was released. And by that I mean the sheer amount of times that it was released and they were like, hey, it's cool. It's not that cool. Not for the 15th fucking time in 2 years. Fuck you. Well,
you don't have to buy it every time.
Well, that's the gist of it.
I didn't. You did. You were the problem, Joe.
If people buy it, they're going to keep releasing it. And as long as I don't buy it, I don't care if they keep releasing it. Yeah. So that's about the gist of that.
I had to care because I had to keep fucking hear about it.
No.
No, no, you don't.
I don't anymore because they stopped releasing. Now they've moved on to re-releasing Grand Theft Auto 5 50 billion fucking times.
Totally
they
haven't different stopped companies.
Releasing it. I just got it on PS5.
What, Skyrim?
Yeah.
GTA 5. Oh,
Skyrim. I bought it. Yeah, there's a PS5 version.
Huh. Oh, the anniversary edition.
I would assume that one probably runs like well, at least, because I know the original release was like all kind of choppy.
It could be the PS4 version. I don't know. I have it on my PS5, though.
Anniversary edition? You're missing one. I'm shocked.
Hmm?
Do you not own the anniversary edition?
Me?
For the new consoles? Yeah.
I have it, yeah. It's just DLC.
Yeah. I bought
it
on Switch.
It's not a whole new re-release. It was literally just a DLC bundle you could buy.
Oh. It was like a 10 gig download for me. Wasn't bad.
She bitches about
I haven't played it yet, though.
Come on.
I'm a woman. Of course I do.
But Sneak King. That one hurts. Good old Burger King games.
Well, it's still not expensive, right?
No, it's like $4.
Okay, good.
Thankfully, all of the games that got hit were cheap ones.
Except for, I assume, the collector's edition.
Two games over was like a rare one. Spectral Force 3.
Maybe you should put all the shitty games down below where the cats can piss on it and put all the good games up real high.
I've rearranged that shelf. There's nothing on the bottom shelf. And I have re-put the cardboard barricades up.
Spectral Force 3 is rare?
I think so.
As rare as people buy it for much or just hard to get?
I don't know. Let's look it up. Spectral Force 3.
It's not really rare. It's just playing hard to get.
$40.
Like weebies like me would buy, but not particularly like popular. No, I like
what is an example? What's an example of a truly expensive 360 game? Specifically 360.
God, I don't know. Like, what do you consider truly expensive?
Let's say over $100.
El Chavo Cart.
El Chavo Cart.
Yes.
I haven't heard that. What the hell is that?
It's a shitty kart racing game.
Wow, and it's expensive?
People will pay for whatever. That's like freaking that game to the freaking poop racer game or whatever it was that became popular.
Oh, yeah. No, those people really will spend so much money on like stuff that is nigh unplayable.
I was going to say 50 Cent Blood on the Sand, but that looks like it's come down in price quite a bit.
And that's also available on original Xbox, right?
No. Blood on the Sand was the sequel to Bulletproof, which was on the original Xbox. Bulletproof was an awful game. Blood on the Sand is one of the greatest co-op shooters I've ever played in my life.
Wow. What a glow up.
It is just popcorn action craziness. It's over the top, it's insane, and it's fun. And they nailed it with that one.
See, I would have hoped they would have done that originally too, which is too bad. Oh well. It's when they try to take it all too seriously that it, you know, Japanese shmups. Yeah, I did buy a whole bunch of shmups from a friend of mine though for pretty cheap, but then those might be expensive now.
Oh, the ones you have are all expensive.
Oh,
like all those shmups that you got off your friend are like they're all $100+, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. So there we go. I guess that answers my question. What expensive 360 games are there? I already have them.
Yeah, I know there's some Xbox One visual novel that was worth a few $100. I don't remember what it was though.
Wow. Well, I have I have the one PS4 game I know that's like over $1,000, depending on who's trying to sell it. Godzilla, and it's still sealed up. My plan is to actually play through all the Godzilla games leading up to that one, and then I'm going to very ceremoniously unwrap it and then play it and enjoy it.
if you're gonna do that, you should just like sell it to buy a used one.
Nah.
And then keep the rest of the money.
it's the principle of the thing. It's got to be devalued.
You always play the brand new one. You always do.
Yeah.
It's how you live your life.
It's specifically to screw with resellers. Like, I don't care. I'm never going to sell it. And, you know, it...
Oh my God,
like,
factory sealed, $900.
There you go.
I'll take
that's
them.
That's the one. I bought it for 40. I made Fry's Electronics price match it with an online retailer that had it in stock. So it was marked 50 and I got it for 40.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I don't own any expensive Xbox 360 game.
Well, you're missing out.
Basic shit.
If I do, I wouldn't even know what they are.
There's a guy selling one for $275. So maybe it's come down a bit.
What has?
Godzilla. I see one selling for $275 for a seal.
Is that the Japanese version or the American version? Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Buy it and I mean, resell I hope it comes down.
Huh?
Buy it and resell it for $500.
Nah. Oh, yeah, Joe, Joe can do that with the one that's over there now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, do it. I don't care. I got my copy, so. I actually did almost buy a Xbox copy of Godzilla Save the Earth, which isn't very good, but it's like $60. and so I wanted to get it, but I opted not to. And then I almost bought a copy of King Arthur and the Knights of Justice for the Super Nintendo, which is also climbing up in price, which is not great because it's bad. But it's one of the two Enix published games in the United States before they became Square Enix that I don't own.
What's the other?
Freaking Evo Search for Eden, which I'm never going to own.
How much is that going for?
I haven't checked recently, but last I checked, it was like $300 to $400.
Gee.
Yeah, it's always been that way. Even before 2020, it was like too expensive. Let's see.
There's only, at it right now. There's
still card only going for $200.
No, 200's not actually bad. That's coming down.
There's still only one expensive game I want, and that's the Gundam Saga game, which was a little RPG for the PS2.
Ooh.
That's the only even remotely expensive game that I want, and it's like 100 and something bucks, or 200 and some bucks, something like that.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just like, that's a significantly more than I want to pay for a PS2 game that I play. It's not like I'm buying it to fucking be like, okay, now you sit here and look pretty. No, I want to buy it so I can play that motherfucker.
I've been getting stuff on clearance lately. Like collector editions on sale. I got a... Nice.
Mercati?
No, like my recent pickups I got off the Namco store. I got Tales of Symphonia with a metal case for $40.
Nice.
And Pac-Man World with like a little Pac-Man statue with ghosts on it for like $40.
Do you have that anywhere? Can we see it?
No, I don't have it yet. They're coming this week.
Okay.
And I also bought their Park Beyond Special Edition for $100. That comes with a roller coaster figure looking thing.
I don't know if I know what that game is. I assume it's a
theme park.
No. Like a sim game, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bree reviewed it like 2 weeks ago.
Okay, I was wondering if that's what that was.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, these Evos are actually not too bad. I mean, this is actually possibly doable.
All right, Rocky, I posted a link in chat for that Park Beyond bundle.
Checking it out right now.
It's a nifty little collector's edition. I like tiny little fun size collector's editions. Like, not everything needs to have a 24-inch tall statue. Those are cool, but... I'm good with like a tiny little desk statue and a steel book and some bonus content.
Yeah, I like this. I like the statues just because I don't have very many of them. Yeah. If I had like 50 billion of them like you do, I probably wouldn't like them as much. But like I have one.
I had a choice between two special editions. It was the Park Beyond Collector's Bundle that comes with the steel book, the art book, the game, stickers, bonus content, a lanyard, collector box, and a poster, or I could have gotten the Final Fantasy 16 Deluxe Edition that comes with a steelbook and a map.
And then you'd have to play a game where your main character is named Clive.
Oh, I don't care about that. I'm just comparing the amount of content you get between the two editions.
I do have that Final Fantasy 16. It's pretty sweet.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, I like the game.
Yeah. I haven't played it yet. I'm still waiting on it.
Yeah, that's cool. I need to play some more of it.
You're still waiting on it?
Yeah.
We haven't had your house?
No, we haven't had the money for it, so.
Oh, okay. I thought you had bought it.
Very selective in what we're picking up lately.
Understandable.
Yeah. FF16 is one that can definitely be low on the list, because, you know, it's they print a billion of those.
Yeah. Plus, I've been watching people stream that, so.
No, that's cool.
I still haven't finished 15, so I'm really, really wholly unconcerned about the Final Fantasy games.
I haven't even finished 10. 10's the last one I dropped off on. I don't think next
to anyone finished 10.
I've seen it finished a few times on streams and stuff. And plus, I watched my sister beat it. It's one of the only RPGs she's beaten. So I have the opposite experience. I've seen more people beat FF10 than any other, and but I have yet to beat it myself.
I think I got to the point where you fought Seymour on Cid's ship or something like that, and that was as far as I got. I never beat that fight because I just didn't care.
Well, it's never went back. Who does care?
Exactly. I fucking hated that tool. And yet I finished almost all of Final Fantasy X-2 because Pain was in it, and Pain is still my favorite character out of
all. So anyway,
hey, everyone has their Beltlane girl.
Yeah, Aki's on the Pain train, we know.
Yeah. And, hey, it's better than the overly fucking used Lulu, you people.
One of my close friends cosplayed as Lulu at the very first Magfest, and it was nice. An awesome costume.
Yeah, there's a streamer friend that got a costume of Lulu, and it included the all the belt buckles and stuff.
Oh, jeez.
That must have taken forever.
Yeah, she couldn't move. She took pictures and stuff in it and such and, like, you know, modeled it, but, like, she couldn't actually, like, move in it.
Oof. Fun.
That's why I don't cosplay. I don't have the patience for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, we do have a couple of games we got to talk about tonight. Should we get to these?
Sure.
Ernell, you ready?
Yeah, I am.
You good over there?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. First game to talk about tonight, Master Detective Archives Rain Code, developed by Tukio Games and Spike Chunsoft, published by Spike Chunsoft, released June 30th on the Switch for $59.99. Yuma, an amnesiac detective in training, and Shinigami, the spirit haunting him, tackle unsolved mysteries. A brand new lucid noir detective adventure game from the minds behind the Danganronpa series. Brunel, what is going on in Rain Code?
So, if you were someone that found yourself thinking, wow, I was a big fan of those Danganronpa games, and I'm sad to see that they have gone away. Or, man, those Danganronpa games were great, but I was so tired of the whole premise of super high school level hope versus despair nonsense. I'd like something different from a narrative perspective. Well, this game is pretty much that to a T. And I say that in a good way, because I was kind of the former in that I liked Danganronpa a lot, but I also felt it kind of ran its course and it was time to move on to a new narrative. But I liked the gameplay elements of Danganronpa. So with that in mind, I say that with a lot of games and general other franchises over the years, that it would be nice if companies would take a chance on new narratives once they got a formula that works for them. And this company pretty much did that with Rain Code here, and I've come to really appreciate it. The idea behind this is that it's weird in the sense that due to the way they write their stories, you can't even say but so much about what happens, because even early on they hit you with some whammies like, wow, I didn't expect that to happen. Even if you've played some of the other games in their pedigree, you might still be surprised. So I'm not going to tell you particularly narrative beats or anything, but I can give you the general flow of how the gameplay works. Your character, who is tasked with working for the World Detective Organization, this is just the general plot, is working together with a team of detectives that also work for the World Detective Organization, with the intent being to take down Amaterasu Corporation, or rather, investigate a location called Kanai Ward, which is under the helm of the Amaterasu Corporation. And this whole scenario involves you solving a series of unsolved murders or mysteries, and you are in the process of doing so kind of flying directly in the face of this company. So it's pretty much a battle between these two entities. And the flow of exchange in the game is that you'll find yourself going through a series of narrative beats where you're exploring Kanai Ward as a town that where it never stops raining, by the way. So if you were like, wow, I missed the weirdness behind why am I stuck in a high school that I can't exit from, that's strange. Well, here you go. You're in a mystery of a town that is locked off from the outside world and it won't stop raining. Why is that? Well, there you go. Look forward to finding out the answers to that. But you're exploring the city. It's broken up by different districts that you can kind of travel to by way of taking the bus, which is basically finding selecting on the menu on the map, and then walking around that area, talking to people, investigating, progressing the plot, and every once in a while even resolving side missions as you come across them, which I'll talk about the reason why you would do that in a second. But eventually you'll come across a point where you'll be introduced to a mystery. And once you engage that mystery, you have to go to different crime scenes and investigate them, where the game doesn't really allow you to miss a beat on investigation because everything you find there is important to the next aspect of the game. So just expect yourself to be walking around, potentially with some accomplices to help you search out the case. You'll investigate the locations, and as you do so, you'll take note of the things you find. They get added to like a checklist in your notebook. And once you finish doing all the investigation, something will occur, and then the weird element of the game takes place, which is that... Oh, I should mention also, sorry. This game's version of super high school level abilities is actually, in my opinion, actually kind of nicer. It's cooler. Each master detective gets what's called a forte, which is a special ability that's unique to them. For example, you might have a person who can... God damn it. a person that's able to, search out like almost like with a radar, like how much life is within a general area, like how many living people are in the area. Someone who has like super hearing abilities. Some people who are just like capable of like sensing like explosions or like sensing the past, weird things like that. And they'll be using some of the investigations too. So now going forward, once you've done enough investigations, the weird aspect of the game is actually what takes place here. In which case, through your contract with the Shinigami Death God, which I gotta look that up if Shinigami just means Death God and people just do the whole thing. But anyway,
it basically does.
I figured, I'm like, people, they interchange and I'm like, they have to be one and the same. But eventually, what ends up happening is through your contract with this Death God, you gain access to a concept called a mystery labyrinth. The mystery labyrinth is a physical embodiment of a mystery. With passageways that you explore, and the passageways are threaded with mysteries and monsters that are representations of the murder mystery you're trying to solve. So the mini games that you had to deal with during the class trials in Danganronpa are represented in this mystery labyrinth. As you progress, you might come across a room, for example, where you need to solve a question that might have like two or so like potential outcomes, like what is the answer to this question, and it just counts as like a fork in the road of the labyrinth. When you get to this point, you will get a scenario will occur where the Shinigami essentially pulls out a death knife, slashes your throat, blood splashes out your neck, hits the wall, and a question is displayed explaining what you're trying to answer. And each passageway will depict one of the potential answers to the question. Based on what you choose, that determines what direction in the labyrinth you'll proceed down. And you'll pretty much explore that way. Whether it's right or wrong, you'll find out. The next thing, type of example, like one of the other main mini games you can play, which is probably the one most needed to discuss. Other ones are just like different mini games, but the main one worth discussing is like the Deathbound Reasoning Deathmatch Battles, where occasionally you'll be tasked with combating a physical embodiment of a person that's trying to hinder your investigation. They will be like a sort of like a warped, twisted version of the real world iteration of that person. And when you have to engage them, you will be sort of sent to a battlefield, which is a quick time scenario where you'll be tasked with dodging physical representations of words they're sending at you. Like they might say a line like, "You have no idea what you're talking about," and it will like be displayed, bounce around and come towards you. It might be above you, in front of you, or below you, and you have to dodge it up, down, or to the side to get out of the way. Sometimes, however, it'll be coming in the form of noise, which is just meant to be an obtrusion or an obstruction to what you're trying to do. And you have an actual sword, a solution blade, as it's called, that you can use to slash at the words to destroy them. Sound familiar? What if you played Danganronpa? And eventually, you might come across dialogue that is sent to attack you that actually is a contradiction to some evidence you might have. Evidence which can be loaded into the solution blade and then used to slash the contradiction to do damage to the enemy. And eventually you'll do enough damage where you'll either defeat them or they will run away. And you'll proceed further into the labyrinth. Narrative dialogue will take place between your character and Shinigami. You'll eventually get to the point where you deal with other mini-games and get through the labyrinth. Plot twists will be revealed. Discoveries will be made. And eventually you'll get to the solution. What happens when you solve a mystery labyrinth? Well, I'm not telling you that. Because that's also an interesting point to the narrative that is depicted as a whole. Wow, that happens! So, I won't tell you. With that said, I feel like everything about this game is kind of like what I brought up at the beginning. Oh, I forgot to mention one last thing. The thing I mentioned earlier about doing the side quests and why you would do them. Well, as you do investigations and walk around exploring the areas in between investigations and the actual mystery labyrinth running, you can investigate different objects, talk to different people, and just engage the world you're exploring. And as you do that, or fulfill side quests, you'll get detective points. Detective points can be used to eventually level up your character, and then you can use the level ups plus the detective points to purchase upgrades to your character, which will make exploring the mystery labyrinth better or easier. You might get more stamina or hit points, which will allow you to take on more failures if you make mistakes in doing the death battles or the mini games or whatever. You might get something that will allow you to remove some of the potential mulligan options from your solution key choices. That way you don't waste time, which is limited in certain cases, interacting with clues that don't matter to the case. So things like that. I don't feel like you ultimately need those if you really found yourself being like, oh, no, I don't feel like dealing with that. But it makes things easier if you want to engage that. And it just gives you one more thing that's cool to do. So now with that all said, I feel like going back to what I said at the beginning of the review, this game feels exactly like if someone said, I want to take this successful formula that we came up with in Danganronpa, but give it a completely new narrative so that it's not tied to a previous work and we can do new things with it. And I'm fine with that. Even though I might look at a character here and they'll go, huh, she looks just like Junko Inoshima. Whatever. Who knows? Because, you know, anime art styles and whatever. It's a very distinct art style he goes with, or that company goes with. But it still works. I think the game is still fun. I bought the game. I'm keeping the game. But I was happy to review it and play it earlier than when my physical game came in. So this game is worth it. I feel as though if you like murder mystery games, if you like games that have weird, over-the-top plots nestled inside of simpler narratives even, you will like this game. You might hate some of the potential anime tropes that might come up here and there, but if you like anime tropes, then you will also love this game. Ultimately, it's worth the time, it's worth the money, and I look forward to seeing if they do more with the Master Detective Archives subno header of this game instead of just dropping it at Raincode.
Mount, the game is $59.99. What's your official verdict on this one?
Definitely a buy in this case. I feel like this is a nice direction for this company to go in with murder mystery or even just visual novel games. I'm good for more.
Cool. All right, next up, Gimmick Special Edition, developed by City Connection, published by Bitwave Games and Clear River Games, released July 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Save the day as a platform-bouncing, star-shooting cutie pie in this long-lost NES gem that is also the basis for our very own Chris Taylor's musical career. Chris, tell us about Gimmick.
I guess my music career could be summed up by that one band, but that's not like, also you said the basis for my career and I'm like, basses, because that's what I play. Anyway, yes, I did specially request this game when it came through. Let me tell you a little story since we're, we only have a little bit of time today. Okay, so I have been aware of Gimmick / Mr. Gimmick for almost 20 years now. This is a 1992 Sunsoft game that came out in Japan and Sweden. It kind of arrived in a strange place in history with video games. Of course, NES games were still a little, they were getting a little thin on the ground because the Super Nintendo was already out and kicking ass. And so, you know, But companies like Sunsoft and, you know, and Capcom and some others were still cranking them out for you know, fans. And indeed, some of these games that came out were, like, really innovating in, like, all kinds of directions. And like, you know, like if you get into any kind of, like, genre of old video game, you suddenly find that that what we Americans had in terms of, like, NES, you know, 8-bit and 16-bit in general, was really the tip of an iceberg, because there's just so much more that stayed in Japan. So basically what was happening at this point in Sunsoft's, like, history, you know, they had come out with a whole lot of games in Japan, like, just from the beginning, basically, of the NES, lots of stuff, and they also were separately making, like, some stuff specifically for the U.S., you know, like, the Spy Hunter port, you know, there's Target Renegade, I'm just going off the top of my head here, I should probably be looking at a list, and, you know, they came out with stuff like Blaster Master, Journey to Silius, Gremlins 2, Lemmings, just like all kinds of. I remember the Roadrunner game on the Super Nintendo. Like, it was just such a weird spread of things. And like at this point, they were like trying to come up with a mascot because this was the early 90s. Sega was now out. You know, Sonic was a big thing too. And so, you know, kind of like companies were kind of looking for like their mascot to support their brand. And Sunsoft had tried and failed already in the previous year with a game that would ultimately be, or that, you know, called Hebereke, which ultimately became known as Euphoria the Saga. And, you know, it starred a guy like, oh, what was his name? Bop Louie, that's right. So it started a weirdo character called Bop Louie that they were like, this is going to be our mascot. And Americans were like, it looks like a weird snowman with a hoodie. And Japan was like, okay, we'll keep this one and only release it in Europe as well. Ha, huh, take that. And then the next year they were like, okay, now we've got Yumi Taro. And in his video game gimmick / Mr. Gimmick, which even reached the prototype phase of a U.S. release and was canceled for the pretty much the same reason. They didn't see Yumi Taro as, like, a mascot that would do well in the States, which, you know, is odd to me that such a choice could be made. I mean, you know, the next year we would get Kirby, who I would argue is weirder. So anyways, so Gimmick stayed in Japan, and like I said, in a strange move, possibly related to the fact that Hebereke was released in Europe, they decided to make an extremely limited release and brought Gimmick out to Sweden. And so, you know, time went by. The game eventually became really well known, both for being a really good game with an exceedingly excellent soundtrack. Like, just out of this world, because, and this is the other thing that Gimmick's known for, Sunsoft created a unique sound chip for this game called the Sunsoft 5B. This is, like, it basically has more sound channels than I think any other NES game, unless I'm mistaken. It definitely has a different sound chip than any other, and so it sounds different. It still sounds 8-bit, but there's just so much going on top of, like, some really thunderous bass. It's just got, like, so many melody channels and so much intricate stuff going on, and it just sounds so sophisticated. And part of that also is that it's not the usual Sunsoft composer, Naoki Kodaka, who you would know from Blaster Master, Journey to Silius, Gremlins 2, and the like. It was this guy called Masashi Kageyama, who was a jazz saxophonist. And this is one of the handful of games that he did. I don't think he did any games that actually ultimately came over to the US, but I could be wrong. Again, this is top of my head stuff. I've been obsessed with this game for a while. So anyways, yeah, Gimmick stayed in Japan. The cart in pre-2020 like before, like the idiot resellers like made everything too expensive to enjoy. A gimmick was still like a Japanese cart was going for like, you know, $700,000, you know, just cart only. And it's likely just gone up since then. It's one of the big collector's items if you're an NES collector, because it wasn't even a big print run in Japan, really. And so, yeah, it's a game that has some notoriety there. And when I was first introduced to it via fan translation, it was an interesting one because, like, you know, even, you know, like, emulators kind of had to catch up to it in order to represent all the sound channels. In fact, I have a flash cart on my, you know, an EverDrive N8 Pro that I play ROMs on my actual NES. And when I had my NES RGB modded, I specifically paid for a sound expansion mod that allows my NES to play the sounds that come out of Gimmick. So, wow. Specifically, like, you have to plan to emulate this game. it's wild. And there was even a brief moment in 2010 when on the Wii, they actually ported over Euphoria the Saga, the European version, and allowed Americans to download it via Virtual Console. And me and like three other nerds were rubbing our hands together greedily, like, okay, this is our chance. Gimmick's finally coming. And the fever of like just this game is like such a thing that like when I in 2012, when I was like deciding I wanted to make like my own video game band, and I was talking about it with the person who would eventually become the original bassist for my band. I was like, I want to call it Gimmick, and I want to cover Gimmick. And we ultimately, you know, that's what happened. That's why my band of 10 years ago was called Gimmick, because I was already like 10 years into knowing about this game and playing it and stuff. So imagine my surprise when finally, in 2023, Bitwave, God bless them, announces that Gimmick Special Edition is coming out on the Switch, you know, PS4 and Steam and all that good stuff. But the Switch, specifically, I'm interested in because I got Nintendo controllers on the Switch. Yeah, I definitely requested this one. I have no need of, like, actually playing the port, although I did. I could just talk about this game all day. Clearly. So, yes, that is the history of what we're talking about today. So, Gimmick is a game where you play a toy called Yumitaro, who is given as a birthday present to an unnamed little girl. And the little girl is kidnapped and taken to a magical world by the other toys who are jealous of Yumitaro, apparently. The entire intro is wordless, but you kind of get that sense out of it. So the little girl is kidnapped, brought to a magic floating island world. Yumitaro finds a convenient doorway to this world and follows them in. Yumitaro has one special power, and that is that he can create a star above his head. So this game is an action platformer, I would almost say a puzzle platformer in a way. We'll talk about that in a second here, but yeah, basically you go through, you know, a list of levels, and depending on what you do, you could either, you know, like I said, get through these platformer levels that are very challenging, very based in physics that are a little bit more realistic than what you're used to on an NES game, and then you either don't save the girl or you find the extra bonus secret last level and fight the secret last boss and actually save the girl. So there's two different endings in this game. So as you're playing through, like I said, your star is not only your weapon that you throw at enemies in a kind of way that, like a basketball. So like you throw it on the ground, it bounces and it loses bounce as it goes. The higher you jump when you launch the star, the higher it's going to bounce because of gravity. And this game has gravity. If you walk on a hill that is going up, you walk slower. It's harder to like climb the hill, and it's harder to like jump and get your footing. If you're going down a decline, then you start sliding. The game absolutely prepares for this by putting spikes at the bottom of every hill, and enemies, like when you're trying to jump, jumps have momentum. This game is absolutely something that if you want to play it, you're going to have to get used to the physics of it. But the cool thing is that this game is like, it's very well designed in that things that are going to give you a lot of trouble later are presented in earlier stages as much easier obstacles. They pay very good attention to that. And yeah, like I said, at the end of each stage, you fight a boss that is either a toy from the toy box that kidnapped the girl, or just kind of these unrelated bosses and stuff. The big thing about this game is that the enemies are, like, it's like, I'm not going to say unique, but they tend to have, like, kind of, they seem more alive than in other games. Like, they have the kind of AI where they, you know, they chase you around and they, like, try to follow you and stuff, but they also just kind of might ineptly throw their weapons at you or something. Some of them, you know, take two hits because they're the leader and they're wearing a crown, so your first star knocks off the crown, and then you can knock them over. Some of them... Huh?
We hit 150 uses of the word unique on this show since last October.
That we've paid attention to.
Yeah, that we've officially registered on the counter. We are probably well into the thousands by now, but we are officially at 150. Chris, how does it feel to be on one of your reviews?
Well, I feel I would like to thank the Good Pastor Academy for presenting this award. I want to thank Jesus. I want to thank my mom. I want to thank you, Mitaro, and the little girl, too.
I got to ask, though, did you count every time, let's say, one of us said unique, and then we did the, you know, the
No.
Did you count both of them?
No, we just count that as one use.
Just making sure. Had to
like
make
our
sure
discussion right now, we're probably not counting that. All the uses that were... It's
just when it comes up in a... Yeah.
It's only for unique uses of the word unique.
That's not going to count either, just saying.
One of those counts.
No. Well, I got to say... This is the game to use it on, if you know, if we're going to use that word. But yeah, like what I was saying before, is that, like I said, enemies seem to have more personality. Bosses are very tough, but they there's like different gimmicks to them, if you will. For instance, there's one boss that if you can reach him early enough, you'll actually catch him napping, and you can just push him off the side of a cliff. It's extremely hard to do, and... One would argue that most gamers will never see it happen, but, you know, this game packs in, like, little details like that. There's just all kinds of, like, little details that happen in this game. And that is to say, the one thing that is going to be, maybe not to its detriment, you know, hear me out on this. This game is hard as balls. This is known as a very difficult game. Now, Sunsoft games are already difficult. We know this from, you know, all the games that are there. I mean, I don't know that Sunsoft has an easy game, but Gimmick is especially tough. You know, like I said, on top of the physics of you sliding around, like I said, your jumps have momentum, you know, hills are dangerous, enemies are coming after you, and they're a little bit smarter than your average enemy. And, you know, bosses are particularly tough. This is a game that you're going to be chewing on for quite a while, but thankfully, this release does have different modes. So, basically, you have a you have your like choice of difficulty with normal mode, where you get a very nice rewind feature, which on top of, you know, save states and you know, quick save and quick loads, what they call them here, but it's basically save states. The rewind feature is very, very handy for this particular game, although I will say you'll often find yourself rewinding and overcorrecting, and, like, you know, because this game is so based in momentum, like, you really can't just, like, rewind after a jump. Like, you'll probably be sailing off into a different direction, you know? So you do have to kind of get used to the way the rewind works. But, yeah, once you've beaten the game in normal mode, then you got serious mode, where it's just the game. It's the basic game. You know, there's no saving it, there's no rewinding it. It's just exactly as if you were playing it. And then speedrun mode, where it has a timer and you get ranked. This game has been out for a little while now. There's only 23 entries in the... true ending route is what they call it. You know, the true ending is the real challenge of the game. So only, like, that's pretty amazing for a game as well known as a speedrun game, at least, as this one, is that only 23 people have managed it so far.
You know what constitutes the true ending?
Huh?
You might have said it, and I may have missed it, but do you know what constitutes getting the true ending in this?
Okay, so that is actually what I was just about to talk about, so that's a perfect question. So, on top of this game being very hard, there is the path to getting the true ending, which is among the hardest things you can do. So, it requires absolute mastery of being able to bounce a star off the wall, jump off the star, and then land, like, pitch perfect onto, like, a ledge in a screen that you can't see. It's things like that. Well, it's none of it is, all of it is within view. I'm just saying that, like, you know, you got to make a jump out of the screen and into the next screen kind of thing. And yeah, they're very, very, very precise movements into secret areas in each level where you have to collect a special item. And if you collect the special item in every level, that unlocks the final level. These secret areas are much, 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 much harder than the normal gameplay. And like I said, they do rank among, like, some of the hardest stuff you'll experience on an NES. However, they are totally worth it. Like I said, it really feels good when you do figure out, like, how the physics work and how to utilize the star and stuff. Like, there's a reason why people are so fascinated by this game, and that it's just designed so well that they can make it this hard and you still want to, like, do it. Again, you can beat it without it. It's just, like I said, you know, even with the rewind options, you gotta still figure out how you're gonna use your one tool to get to these secret areas. And, I mean, you know, in the time I've had the game, I'm in level 5 now, and I've picked up all the items so far. So, you know, like, it's doable, I can do it. So, but anyways, so yeah, there's a lot to munch on in this game. And so, yeah, the other features that you get in this one, weirdly enough, they didn't even bother to put in a CRT mode. I appreciate that about them. Yeah, I know. The game is fully playable on NES controllers, the NES controllers you can buy for the Switch, with the exception that you won't be able to access the menu with the controller because it's mapped to the X button. However, you can still rewind with the shoulder buttons that they put on those things. And like I said, the game is mapped to the A and B button correctly. If you have the controller on normal mode, you can also put the controller on rotate mode that will switch A and B with B and Y so that you can get Super Nintendo style controllers controls. And the A button will still work the way it's advertised. It's just because it rotates, you know, it feels more comfortable for a SNES style controller or a Pro controller. So that's really nice. You know, you only get the two screen sizes, just original and zoom. Original is pixel perfect, and zoom is, you know, still 4:3, but bigger. You know, it's like, you can turn the background music off, which is, don't do that. And the other thing that they provided is scans of the original gimmick instruction book. And also the original Mr. Gimmick instruction book, as well as box art. And Mr. Gimmick is what the game is called in Sweden. And indeed, the instructions are in Swedish. So you can look at the instructions in Japanese or Swedish, if that helps you.
Very nice.
However, I notice that the menu language is only has English and Japanese options. So if you are Swedish and you're buying this, then tough luck. You can read the instruction book, but you can't read the menu, I guess. Oh, but anyway.
Well, it sounds like a good package. $15 on this one. What is your verdict?
Oh, God, please go buy this. I not only want you to buy this, I want you to, like, encourage Bitwave to, like, come out with even more, like, hit, you know, Sunsoft classics. And just, like, classics in general that we never got over here. Like, this is our time. I never thought I would see Gimmick get a US release, to be honest. After 2010, when Euphoria came out, nobody cared, and, you know, it kind of just, nobody even talks about it. I was like, yeah, they're never gonna bring out Gimmick, I guess. And now it's here, it's available. This is, you know, it really makes it feel like, you know, the Switch is just this golden system because of so much stuff that's, like, been coming out lately for it that we never thought we'd get. This is, yeah, if you buy this, you'd be doing me a personal favor. So absolutely, this is a buy it. And $15 is not even bad. And also, just to let you know, I think Limited Run has a physical edition. I know that for a fact because I bought one. But I think another small batch seller is also printing up a physical edition. So you can buy this physically if you want to, but it's going to be more than $15. You know, do that if you want to. But either way, pick it up, play it, enjoy a nice, hard, but extremely high-quality game from a bygone era in a country unfamiliar to us.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
You were right. That was going to be a long one.
Yeah, I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to fully rant about this.
Hey, it works. Because we only have one more game to talk about. That is Rain World, developed by Video Cult, published by Akupara Games, released July 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PS5 for $24.99. Downpour DLC is available the same day for $14.99. You are a nomadic slug cat, both predator and prey in a broken ecosystem. Grab your spear and brave the industrial wastes, hunting enough food to survive, but be wary. Other bigger creatures have the same plan, and slug cats look delicious. Pernell, what is going on in Rain World?
Well, the funny thing is, by design, a lot of this game is meant for you to figure out what's going on yourself. But the simple premise is that, well, you kind of just said it. You are a slug cat trying to survive in an environment that is, for all intents and purposes, extremely hostile to your kind and anything like you. So the way the gameplay mechanic flow works is you start out, you choose one of two initially slug cats. One that just seemed like a bit of a pacifist, like where the game is meant to be for exploration only or whatever. I didn't bother with it because I wanted to play the basic slug cat. So that's the one I used. And the way that guy works is you start out in a little room, you leave that room, and you're exploring this map. Things you can do are walk, jump, sort of do like a long jump. You can also scale poles and kind of shimmy across lines that are set up for you to do so. Oddly enough, in this world, there's also what would be considered the equivalent of like warp pipes, where you can kind of squeeze into them and like kind of get shimmied into other areas, whether on the screen or on another screen. So, also worth mentioning, each area is a massive size map, but within that map, it's broken up into individual screens. So, if it's a long room, it's actually a long room composed of two or three screens. So, as you're exploring this place, you're trying to do a few things. One, you're trying to find food. Certain things are accessible to the slug cat that if you catch them, you can press a button to consume them and fill your stomach. The next thing to do is to locate, well, shelter, really, because those are pretty much the main things you're trying to do. I guess I should say also in the middle there, you're trying not to be eaten by predators because they are out there looking around either for you or just in general. And if you cross their path, some might just aggressively attack you if you get too close. Others will outright sniff you down and try to hunt you out. Every enemy in the game has its own behavior, so much so that some of the enemies will attack other enemies because they're intruding on their turf. It's a pretty cool thing to see, really. But back to the third thing that you can do in this game and have to do in this game is you have to find new shelter. Because there's a clock that's ticking each time you wake up and leave a shelter. And eventually, when that clock runs out, which, by the way, unless I missed it, there's no visual clock. It just happens. You might see like the sky get darker, or you might see shadows start to creep into areas where there weren't shadows before. But at the end of the day, when that clock runs out, it starts to rain. And it starts to rain a lot. Some might even call it a world of rain. Ho ho. And your slug cat apparently can't swim. So if you get caught in the rain and you stay in the rain, you will drown and you will die. So when you find a place where you can hold up and get shelter, you'll hunker down and you will hibernate. Hibernating is a situation where you wait out the rain to stop, the water levels to recede, and you can go back outside. However, if you have not eaten enough food before hibernating, you will die. So it's a bit of a double layer bit there where you're concerned about getting enough food to hibernate when you need to escape the rain and also avoiding the monsters, all under the clock making sure you're not caught in the ring. This game is freaking hard. I mean, it's one of those games where the only thing they explain to you early on is the very basic controls. And one of the control types, which I barely utilize, is that you can occasionally pick up objects and attack predators, like maybe like a stick that you can throw at them, like a spear. Maybe either attack them or scare them away. There's things like that you can do. You can throw rocks to make noise and make them go in another direction and stuff like that. But much of the time, you're just going to be freaking out and trying to stay away from those jerks because they don't mess around. It's a fun game to mess around with, but I will say one thing that might turn a lot of people off is that
it doesn't tell you anything.
I got this, man. Is that they intend for you to kind of explore and discover on your, at your own pace. Like, there's this little yellow thing I've come across here and there. It just kind of pops up here and there on the screen. And sometimes I think he's, like, giving you clues, like, visual clues. Like, hey, there's an enemy over there. He's making noise. Don't get in there. Or they might show what looks like the representation of a shelter. Like, if you bring up the mini-map, but the main map, you can see what looks like a shelter there. And it seems like he's trying to tell you how to get there, but I followed his cues and gotten more lost than when I was looking on my own. So I'm not sure what his deal is, but for the most part, you're just on your own. You're just kind of exploring and trying to figure out things as you go. And for some people, that's great. In a lot of ways, I'm that kind of guy where as long as I got the time and I'm not pressed, generally something that's not the case for reviews, but if I'm just kind of leisurely playing around, I don't mind the exploration bit. I like getting the lay of the land and say, okay, I made the discoveries on my own. All you got to give me is the basic building blocks, i.e. the controls, and I'll go from there. But some folks, like Joe just stated, want to be told, this is what you're doing, that is where you're going, and your only task is actually getting there. But we're telling you how to get there. This game doesn't do that. So you're under a lot of pressure to learn an environment, figure your way around it, and make progress. And then when you think you got it down, you get to a new environment, you got to learn that environment too. So it's, they make you put you through your paces, but the reward is an experience that is wholly your own. You can feel as though you trudged the grounds, you made the discoveries, and you came to the conclusion of ultimately, I guess, saving your slug cat. Now, the DLC, I got to unfortunately say I did not get to, because the DLC has to be unlocked. Like, you can activate it in a menu, but even when you activate it, you have to unlock what it gives you. Most notably of which, also, pardon my voice, I should have said it earlier, but I've been sick, so I got a little scroggly throat over here, but I digress. You gain access to other slug cat types that will kind of change the way of which you engage the game. Now, I cheated a little bit and looked online to see what they did, because in-game, it just kind of shows you, like, a general description, like, this slug cat is cool. He likes the water. This slug cat's cool. He's aggressive. Like, what does that actually mean in the game? So, guess one is better for swimming. One is better for combating monsters. One is just really good, I guess, like, eating food. So, maybe he's got a bigger stomach.
Well, I can read the characters on the Steam page, if you like.
You should do that. That would be cool.
The Rivulet is an aquatic evolved slug cat that can breathe longer underwater. There you go. The Gourmand is a culinary expert that excels in manipulating the objects it finds along its journey.
That means it can eat things that other slug cats can't.
Yeah. The Artificer, the red one, is the fierce combatant and master of pyrotechnics and explosives.
That makes me wonder.
Purple one is the Spearmaster, an abnormality with no mouth that uses needles pulled from its body for combat and to feed.
That sounds cool, actually. So basically, yeah. Just you stab things
feed
to eat it.
Feed me!
But as you can probably tell from what you heard there, by virtue of what they all bring to the table, they will result in you having a fairly, different experience. There, take that, counter. So, I feel as though in the case of this game, this is a situation where since you have to beat the game to actually access these slug cats anyway, there's no point in buying the DLC until you've actually accomplished one run-through of the game proper.
Yeah.
Which will take you some time. And then when you find yourself going, huh, that was satisfying, but what if it were different? Then there you go. Buy the DLC, because there's also, I want to say, it has remixes too. So like alternate elements to the level construction. So maybe more randomization. So yeah, you can feel as like you're getting a different type of a game. Also, I think I remember reading on the Steam page that it has like single type challenges too, or is it any kind of crafted specific challenges for you to try to overcome?
Yeah, they have one time scenarios in the expansion. They also have the randomizer. That has complex quests that you can complete. It has local co-op support. They added a new map system, collectible tracker, better hint system, which was helpful when, like, early in the game, there's a section that I know a lot of people have got caught on, where you just have to jump over a gap. To do the jump, you have to first crouch, then hold the A button, and then point in the direction, and then release the A button, and you jump. They did not explain it very well at all. Like, it took like 5 minutes or so of me failing for the game to just be like, hold A, push the button.
The funny part is that I get it, because the odd part is like the original, and I'm assuming that the original thing before the hey, by the way part was there before the DLC, but on that, it makes it look like they want you to press down, then flick up with A. That's what the actual visual display made me think. So
I kept trying until it just flat out told me. And it's like, hey, stupid, this is what you do. And I was like, oh, thank you. I am stupid.
I had the same problem.
At least you know it.
Yeah.
That thing looked like it said flick down, then up with A. That's what the visual display made me think. So when they actually said, just hold A and don't press anything, like, oh, so you should have just said duck and press A, or duck and hold A.
I will say that having experience with the game did not help me at all. I played this on the PS4 years ago. It was one of the earlier games that we covered when we first started doing reviews. And I just remember how odd the game was, and how just very, I don't know how to put it, hands off it is.
It's obtuse.
Yeah. It doesn't tell you what to do, and it revels in that. And if you can't handle a game like that, you probably shouldn't get this. But if you can handle a game like that, I think there's a lot to offer in this game. The DLC offers tons more. $25 on the game, $15 on the DLC. What are your thoughts?
Also forgot to mention, this game is actually very, very pretty. It's very a good looking game.
Great animation.
And animations too. Are fluid. Yeah. So with that said, I genuinely think this game is worth the money. I think it is a buy. The DLC, I stand by my original statement, though. What it gives you only really stands out after you've beaten the game. Like, those few hints here and there, that's not, to me, worth $15 by itself. I mean, it's nice.
Yeah.
But I'd want to know that I'm going to want to play more of the game than what they give me for this specific type of DLC.
Yeah.
But with that said, the game is solid in itself. So if you find yourself playing through it and going, I want more, then bam, the DLC is going to give you more, and it's going to change up the gameplay so it doesn't get old.
Cool. All right. Well, that's just about it for this episode, but we do have one more tiny thing to tackle. This is going to be Aki's Rage Corner, where Aki wants to talk about Ben 10 Power Trip, developed by PHL Collective, published by Outright Games. It released back in October 2020 on all platforms for $30. Aki, first off, we are Outright Games ambassadors, so please don't get us in trouble. But what were your gripes with this game?
There has been a glitch in it that's existed for ever, basically, and they never bothered to patch it, which drives me nuts. Basically, you have to play a good chunk of this game in just one sitting, because if you leave, there's one set of missions that break utterly and completely. You can still do them, but it doesn't count things correctly. And for some reason, they don't have a system set up to be like, hey, now that you've logged in, let's just fucking check what you've done here. or anything like that. For reasons I can't comprehend, every time achievements like this break, it's because they've done that. And some companies, you know, put out a patch that makes it check them like they have a brain. And then most companies, sadly, they don't they don't do anything with it. They're just like, oh yeah, replay it. Not fun to be told that. The decibel missions, which are just these little ones that you go into. There's like 15 of them throughout the entire map. And there's various amounts in each area of the map, so it's not like you can just go do these real damn quick either. And if you start doing them and you quit out of the game, like, I don't know, to go to sleep or eat or anything, and then go back into it, it breaks the sequence. So it stops counting one or more of them that you've done for no reason whatsoever. Yay! The problem with that is, one, there's an achievement tied to it, and two, it also is technically kind of tied with another achievement, because after you beat all 15 of them, if it registers that you've beat all 15, and it probably won't, you get an upgrade point, and you need that point in order to max out all of the abilities. So, yay! Yeah. So, if it gets fucked up, and it's very likely to, because that is what causes the break, is if you leave before you've completed literally all 15 of them in one sitting, which takes forever, it breaks. I don't know why, it just does. Everyone who's had that issue, that is the same thing. They've all left the game and come back. The only way to avoid it is to do all of this shit at once. So that's fun. So now I have to replay the entire game. So that's fun. That's great. I love that.
It's not a horribly long game, so.
It takes a while if you're trying to get all the upgrades and stuff. Because, yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah. And then
$30, what's your verdict?
That's not the only issue I had, no.
What's the other issue?
It also, for some reason, didn't count the last two story-related achievements in the entire game, so I have to replay the entire game from start to finish to get those.
Well, you were playing it over anyway, so why not, right?
I was hoping I'd just have to play it to that point and then fucking quit.
I only had to play it for, like, 95%.
Well, no, I probably could have gotten it in, like, 20 or 30.
Oh, jeez.
I wouldn't have been happy about it, but I probably could have done it in 20 of the 30-ish, maybe, probably. I don't know. I may have been pushing it.
Rootbeer wants us to mention how Pinball FX is now on the Switch, and it's great.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad someone's having fun.
Yeah. I heard it's finally out on the Switch. Unfortunately, they don't have many of the tables available. I don't know what the issue is, if it's like a physics thing engine or what's going on, but there's only, I want to say like 20, 30 tables available to buy on the Switch right now. I'll probably download it and check it out and at least play the free tables and see how the physics handle and see how the game is on the Switch. I'm not going to rebuy my collection on the Switch because I've been rebuying my collection on the Xbox, and This is one of those times where I miss their old model where you were going to be able to have cross-platform purchases, but it was poorly communicated. That's stuff that they've admitted to, and oh well.
Life happens.
Yeah. But
that sucks.
That's it for this episode. We made it through music this episode. Hey. Chris, tell us, what are we going to do for music?
Well, you can play the one and only Gimmick cover that Gimmick has recorded so far, which is off of our Pay What You Want demo for an album that we're going to work on, I swear. other things that I would recommend, you could put them in the show or not. I know that Grant actually recently collaborated with some folks, including a drummer that I have never met, but have recorded on three different tracks with, including one that's all of the instruments are me except for the drums. And yeah, it's really weird. It's getting weird that we haven't met yet. But anyways, so yeah, they're called the Super Strikers, or just Super Strikers. I don't really remember. I never remember when the articles are part of the name or not.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the song off of Grant. So far, it's I think because they're releasing it through a different portal that I don't know if we could play it on the show. But I'm going to try to. I was just going to play your version.
Well, and another one that I would recommend greatly, because this is a band with whom I have bonded over shared love of gimmick and covering gimmick songs.
I got to ask, is it Steel Samurai?
It is Steel Samurai.
it better be Steel Samurai.
It is track 5 from their album Criminal Justice System, which came out in 2016. It's just called Smod. And that's something I forgot to mention in my review. So Smod is called, the name of the song is Strange Memories of Death, a very emo title for an NES game. And it's actually a song that was buried in the data of Gimmick, but not used in the actual game. But it's an extremely banger song, and nobody knows why it was never used in the game. Bitwave did use it for the game. It's the menu music for Gimmick. Yeah, it's really, really cool that they found a use for it. And that just goes to show you, like, the depth of love that people who appreciate Gimmick have for it, is that we all were like, oh, they use Smod, I can't believe it, yeah!
Steel Samurai is why I know what Gimmick is in the first place.
Yeah, Darmok is a big fan of that soundtrack. She actually covered it in Krieger before starting Steel Samurai, but maybe I shouldn't even mention that band, I don't know.
I don't know anything about that band, so...
They were very temporary.
I don't know anything about any of the bands that have been mentioned.
Just know you should play Smod. I second Smod.
Okay, well, then we're going to end the show with Smod from Steel Samurai. So does anyone have any final words to end a show that's probably a half hour too long?
Listen to Steel Samurai. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
I think you should have cut after saying that it was 30 minutes too long.